fucking hate snow. Yeah, I said it. Yes, I meant it. No, I won't take it back. I hate snow. I hate being cold. I hate having to shovel snow. I hate having to drive on snow. Does it look pretty? Yes, yes. It's very, very pretty to look at. But from a practical point of view, it sucks. Hello, everyone. Yes, yes, wintertime is here, and we are seeing our second snowfall in a week's time. I almost slipped and said snowstorm. It's really not a snowstorm. It's just another nice, lovely snowfall, which does little else but annoy me greatly. Because, as I mentioned last week, people forget how to drive. Sometimes that even includes me. Yeah, I'll admit it. Sometimes I do not drive as well as I should. I get distracted, and I forget myself, but I think I do a better overall conscious effort than other people. The biggest reason why I hate snowfall, and this often applies during non-cold winter months, but the snow just zaps every kind of ambition from my body. And it has, you know, it's not like I had a lot of stuff planned to do outside. It's wintertime. I'm a lawn boy. There's no work to be done outside. But it's just, it's cold and I just don't feel like doing it. It's gloomy outside and it just, I just want to curl up in a ball. I just want to read. And sometimes I have a hard time even doing that. I can't find the ambition to do anything when it's dark and dreary and cold and snowy. I still haven't written much this week, and I apologize. I've read plenty. I've been reading a lot, getting caught up on the Song of Ice and Fire. For those of you not in the know, that is another name for the Game of Thrones book series. I'm not reading Game of Thrones. I am on A Feast for Crows, the fourth book in the series. Good stuff. Reading more than I have in the last couple months, which makes my buddy Mark happy, who got me turned on to the series. But that's about all on a literary aspect I have the ambition to do, is just read that damn thing. I don't know what it is. I got nothing in me. I've made slow, feeble attempts at tweaking the sci-fi novel, which basically has meant that I've been reading it start to finish, fixing little typos, refining little sentences, but God, that's about it. I haven't got into the meat of some of the stuff that I want to change, which really there isn't that much. I just need to bolster up some stuff, and I'm just having a slow going doing that. And I can only do that when I have my laptop at work. And it's hard to, I can't keep my laptop at work all the time, because the wife also uses it for her schoolwork. She's almost done with her semester, but she's needed to have it at work. And or at home, so she can do her schoolwork, so she can wrap up her stuff for the year. And so then I finally realized today, wait a minute, I've got a whole nother book project that I've completely freaking forgotten. The original Mac novel featuring the characters that I've been reading to you about in Our Own Devils. There was the first book called The Darkling Plain, which only a couple of people have read, and I've slowly been working on doing the second draft of that after almost 10 years. I totally forgot about it. I had totally fracking forgot that I was working on that thing. I can't believe that. but yeah, so then, so I brought that book project with me to work today. Started working on it, started reading it, and then just promptly stopped. I had nothing left. On the upside, I have watched. I've been catching up on some TV. finally started watching Louie. I had downloaded that, started watching that yesterday. That's all. The only ambition I can muster is to read or to just sit and stare at a computer screen. I said I was going to start exercising. Well, I actually did a full-fledged physical workout once. That was like a week and a half ago. I haven't done that again. But I have been doing the push-ups. And I started doing the stomach stuff. Got time to get rid of the gut. Yeah. But really, the only reason why I'm doing that is because I want to be able to drop weight so that I can gain it all back here in the next week or so. In the next couple weeks. A week from today, my buddy Mark is coming back from Chicago for Christmas. And a few days after that, the old Nesbitt crew, Sands One, is getting back together for another huge Christmas reunion where we're just going to eat and drink ourselves stupid. So, really, my health goals and fitness goals, do they have anything really to do with my health? No. I'm just trying to maintain balance. I want to be fit so I can be fat. Does that make sense? Nah, I don't care if it does. That's what I'm doing. Is my grasp of logic that sound? No. Definitely not. But one thing I definitely do have, which at least five people have confirmed to me, is a knack for storytelling. And that's really why you're here, isn't it? God, I hope that's why you're here. Well, anyway. But if you... assuming that you are here for storytelling, and you want more, once again, please go to Amazon.com. There you can find this book, as well as my bar book, Time With His Fools, available for download through the Kindle service. And of course, I have short stories there available as well. If you want to be a little thrifty and only spend a buck, there's two of them up there you can download. And of course, if you don't have a Kindle, well, who cares? It's not necessary. Do you have a Droid? Do you have an iPod? Or an iPod Touch, rather. Do you have an iPad? Do you have an iPhone? Do you have a BlackBerry? If you do, you can go to Amazon.com through your mobile device and download the free Kindle application. I've got it. I've got it on my phone. I have a Droid. I have it. It's awesome. I don't always have the ability to carry a huge 1,000-page novel with me in my back pocket, but I always have my phone. And when all else fails, I can fire up my Amazon.com Kindle platform and read a book. I'm currently reading Treasure Island. It was a free copy that came from Amazon, and that's one of the best parts about Amazon.com's Kindle service. God, I am giving them a lot of publicity, even though I don't see a single dime from them. Anyway, the best part is that they have all of these free books from time to time. I picked up Elements of Style, which is a nice little how-to book about the style of writing. Some great little tips in there, and there's Aesop's Fables that came for free. Pride and Prejudice. Never read Jane Austen, but now I can. Didn't cost me a dime. I've got it with me wherever I go. So please check that out for you. And if you don't do it for the free books, do it just to read mine. I'd appreciate it. After last week's double shot, we are up to chapter 28 of Our Own Devils. Had a little bit of a little emotional breakdown for our character Mac last week, as he tries to devise his master plan on how to snag Russell Applegate. Let's see what happens. At 4:20, I was sitting on the foot of a bed on the second floor of the Ramada Inn on South 72nd Street near the I-80 exit. I was sitting ramrod straight and trying to keep my knees from bouncing too much from the adrenaline. The television set was on with the volume down low so that it was nearly inaudible. After a few minutes of annoying myself with the sound of my heels thudding on the carpeted floor, I stood and walked around some. I moved around in a rather aimless little circle, trying to stretch every muscle in my back and arms to relieve the growing tension that was causing them all to bunch. I tried to focus on my surroundings. The room was identical to almost every other hotel room I'd ever seen in my life. As you entered the front door, you stepped into a short hallway, with a closet, rod, and hangers on your left, and a small safe on the shelf above it. Beyond it was a closed door that led into a bathroom complete with personal-sized bottles of shampoo and conditioner, tiny bars of soap, drinking glasses with paper coasters over the mouths wrapped in plastic, and a small two-cup coffee maker. Cozy. Then you walked into the main room with two double beds facing a small dresser with a 19-inch television set bolted to it. On the other side of the beds in the corner of the room was a small table with two chairs next to a heater air conditioner unit built into the wall below the window that was kept hidden behind floral drapes. It was a standard room and it was probably costing me a week's worth of rent on my apartment. There was a knock at the door at 4:28. I nearly jumped out of my skin. My head snapped toward the door so quickly that something seemed to catch in my neck and a warm fuzziness ran down the left side of my neck into my shoulder. I swallowed hard, but didn't move. I only stared at it and listened to my breath come quickly in and out of my mouth. The knock came again, this time followed by a man's voice. "Hello? Mr. Daniels?" It was Applegate. "Mr. Daniels, it's Russell Applegate." "See? Told you." I took a deep breath and let it out slowly as I carefully walked to the door, my right hand absently reaching back to touch the Glock stuffed into my back waistband. I probably wouldn't need it, but it was nice to know that it was there. For some reason, I walked carefully to the door, as though I had some cause for stealth. I peered through the peephole and saw Applegate standing there, his balding pate shone with the reflection of the hall lights and a bit of sweat, as though the elevator ride had taken a little wind out of him. I stared at him through the peephole for a while, my anger seething. He was wearing a gray pinstripe suit with a blue shirt and a white collar. The tie was the same color of gray as the suit with a blue stripe that matched the color of his shirt. He was skimming over a few pages inside of a zip-up leather valise. He was starting to get impatient. I smiled as I opened the door quickly. He smiled at me until he realized who I was. His expression contorted and his mouth had started to form the word "you" when I grabbed him by the lapels of his suit coat and pulled him into the room. I probably did it a little rougher than I needed to, but I didn't care. I yanked him and pulled him to my left side as I let the pneumatic hinge close the door to the room. As Applegate fumbled past me, his papers and valise flew everywhere. I shoved him towards the closest bed. He hit the far corner of the mattress with his shins and fell head first into the walkway between the two beds. Applegate scrambled quickly to get into a seated position on the floor. What was left of his hair was tousled and unkempt. His suit lapels were wrinkled where I'd grabbed them, and his shirt had come loose, and the pale white flesh of his soft belly was exposed. I wondered for a brief moment why you saw fewer three-piece suits nowadays. He looked up at me in fear as he fumbled inside of his coat pocket for his cell phone. "I'll see you put in jail for assault," he declared proudly. His tone of voice did not quite match his appearance. I faked a move like I was going to lunge toward him, stomping my foot on the floor for effect. It worked. He yelped loudly with fear, and the cell phone practically leapt from his hands as he scurried backwards to the wall until his head struck the nightstand between the two beds. I scooped up his phone and tossed it aside as I took a few steps toward Applegate. He was trying to smooth his hair with one hand while the other nursed the bump on his head where it had struck the nightstand. "What are you going to do to me?" he said, trying again to sound proud and powerful. "I haven't decided yet." "You won't get away with this!" I think I will, I said as I pulled my tape recorder out of my back pocket and pressed play. Hi, Alex. It's me, Russ. Just calling to see how you were doing. I picked up a few more items. I hope you'll enjoy them as much as I do. I can't wait to see you again, precious. Applegate's eyes went wide and his face fell as he heard his own voice played back to him. His hands shook as he wiped a small trickle of saliva from the corner of his mouth. Where did you get that? His voice was shaky and uncertain. I only smiled. That doesn't prove anything, you know, he said as he stood carefully and tried to smooth out his appearance. Oh, I think it does, Russ. For one, it proves that you personally knew the whereabouts of a client's daughter who was supposedly missing. Second, it proves that you had an inappropriate relationship with her.
What do you mean by inappropriate?
The items you mentioned on the message? We both know that you were buying her expensive little naughty undergarments from Victoria's Secret. No? He said nothing as he tried to avoid my gaze by looking at the floor. So here's what I think, Russ. I'm thinking that you killed her. I was starting to breathe quickly, and adrenaline was starting to surge, threatening to override rational thought. Primal urges were flashing through my head and were becoming harder and harder to suppress. Applegate looked at me with a look of hurt and anger. His teeth clenched and his hands became quivering fists.
That's a goddamn lie! I would have never done anything to hurt Alex. I loved her! Bullshit!
I shouted angrily as I slapped him hard with my left hand, the tape recorder still in my right. I didn't need to strike him that hard, but I wasn't fully in control of myself. Nor did I really care all that much. The slap sent him reeling over the bed next to the table. He regained his footing more quickly than the last time, but I had run right over the bed after him. As he stood, I grabbed him again by his lapels and slammed him into the curtains against the window. I didn't really need the advantage, but this had put Applegate off center over the air conditioner. He couldn't have fought back if he'd wanted to. You're a married man with a family and a reputation to protect. So when Alex came and told you she was pregnant, you had to get rid of her. Isn't that right? I was practically screaming now. I wondered if there were people in the neighboring rooms or in the hall outside. If so, hotel security would be up in no time. Applegate wasn't shouting. He was too busy trying to keep from crying. His head was down, and his eyes were clamped tight to keep from crying and from looking at me. My face was only inches away from his, and as I spoke, spittle flew from my lips and splattered on him. He flinched every time a drop hit him.
No, 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 he said, shaking his head quickly and almost violently, as though he were trying to wake from a bad dream. That's not possible. I never even had sex with her. Don't lie to me!
Holding him in place with my left hand and the weight of my body, I reached behind me and grabbed the Glock. I shoved the muzzle under the fat skin of his jowls and pushed his head up with it to force him to look at me. He still didn't. He was crying loudly now, and for a moment, I felt a pang of sympathy for him. For a moment. Suddenly, someone grabbed my gun hand by the wrist and twisted it backward at an odd angle. The gun fell to the floor, and as my body twisted to follow my hand, a hard palm shoved me square in the chest. I fell backwards and quickly rose to my knees, nursing my right wrist as Applegate lay curled up in a ball on the floor, crying uncontrollably.
I told you I needed to come with you, Mike said as he stood over me, holding the Glock by the barrel.
I had been effectively settled down. While he hadn't been able to see what was happening from inside his hiding spot inside the bathroom with nothing but a Gideon's Bible to keep him company, Mike had sensed that something was awry just before I'd pulled the gun out. Good thing, too. At first, I'd been angry with him and resentful of his wanting to come along. His belief that I didn't have enough peace of mind and self-control was insulting. Now I was too embarrassed to tell him how grateful I was that he was there. Russell Applegate was sitting on the corner of the bed closest to the door. His crying had subsided to a small, gentle sob. He'd made a feeble attempt at composing himself in the bathroom while Mike had watched over him, making what seemed like a thimble's worth of coffee on the small maker. Now Mike stood in the doorway, leaning against the wall with his arms folded across his chest and ready to keep Applegate from making a run for it. Meanwhile, I chain-smoked and drank coffee while slumped in one of the chairs at the table. The complimentary packet of coffee was weak and bitter.
I got it even by flicking my cigarette ash in one of the water glasses. I wasn't happy about the non-smoking law in the state of Nebraska. James Pine, he's one of my clients, Applegate began, as though I had no idea. He called me up 2 months ago and asked me to check into a thing for him. One of his daughters, not Alex, the other one. Tracy, I said. Yes, that said, she'd been sending money out to an address in Lincoln. James wasn't sure why or to whom. It was by sheer coincidence that the money was going to Steven Sinovec. He's also represented by my firm. I'd already figured that much out on my own, but it was good to hear someone else say it. I spoke with them first because I already knew them by association. They confirmed that they'd been getting the payments from Tracy to pay for their new tenant's rent. The tenant, of course, was Alexandra. I knew, of course, that she'd been missing, so to speak. James himself had told me. He'd even commissioned me to hire investigators to have you followed, Connolly. Of course, no one found her. Well, until I did, by blind luck. It just so happened that Alex was home that very same day I had stopped to speak with the Sinovecs. I knocked upon her door. When she opened it, well, I was immediately smitten. I hadn't seen her since she was barely a teenager. She was so beautiful. He chuckled to himself and shook his head a little. She recognized me almost immediately and began to panic. She begged and made me promise not to tell her father that I'd found her. Did you? Applegate jumped a little at the sound of my voice. Keep my promise? No, I felt duty-bound to tell James I had found his daughter. After all, I was his attorney and not hers. If he knew where she was, why did he keep it secret? He didn't make any attempt to contact her personally. He didn't even tell the rest of the family where she was. Applegate answered me without looking at me. That was James's idea. He felt that if Alex could have the illusion of freedom from him, that perhaps she could flourish. But he did ask me to keep a close eye on her, which I did. I told her that as her father's lawyer, I felt duty-bound to keep an eye on her. This allowed me to stop by on occasion to check on her. As I said, I was already smitten with her. This only served to intensify my little crush on her. But as you said, Connolly, I married. I'm also not exactly physically attractive, especially not to a young woman like Alex. Oh, how I began to fall for her. I would take her to lunch from time to time and just sit there and listen and watch her. My heart ached. I wanted to make her love me. She wanted to be an actress with the Lincoln Repertory Theater. So when she found out she couldn't get into the theater, you pulled some strings. He nodded. Thought that if I could get her into the company, she would be so grateful that she... It was such a stupid thought. But I thought that she'd fall in love with me. She didn't, of course. And then, after I got her in, I couldn't help her be cast in any of the plays any faster than anyone else in the company. Suddenly, my good deed wasn't all that great. So I needed to go about it another way. I would pop up more randomly, sometimes in the evenings, when I really had no business being there. I would stay and talk with her so that we could become closer. I did buy her those things. The undergarments. I don't know why. I guess I'd gone mad or something. Or something. Tell me about the answer machine message. The height of my stupidity, leaving that message. I honestly have no idea what I was thinking. By that time, I was calling her from my office several times a day, or from the phone in my den at home. Why not your cell phone? Said Mike. It was the first thing he had said since he disarmed me. Oh, God, no. My wife checks the wireless bills ruthlessly. If she were to find that call on there... He shook his head. So you're saying that you and Alex never slept together? Russell Applegate stuck his chin in the air, trying to display dignity and pride again. It's really none of your business, but no, we did not. Did you ever do anything to make Alex afraid of you? He said nothing. I stood very quickly, and he quickly rose from the foot of the bed and turned toward me, now pushing himself against the wall with his hands held palm out in front of him. Fine! And at one point, I did threaten to tell her father where she was if she didn't sleep with me. He let his head hang and his shoulders drooped. Which was really just an empty threat because her father already knew, said Mike. He nodded. What ultimately happened? How do you mean? Applegate was lucky I was still seated. Were you ultimately able to consummate your unrequited love? I wanted to vomit. No, he said after a while as he stared down at his hands in his lap. He put an end to it. He? Steven Sinovec. I had, by that time, been paying regular visits to Alex, once a week and usually on a Sunday evening. My wife thought I was going to Rotary Club meetings. I went to her apartment, and when I knocked on the door, he answered. Sinovec, said Mike. Applegate nodded. What happened? He invited me in and offered me a seat on the couch. I sat, he stood. Alexandra was not in the room. He told me plainly to stay away from Alex. I tried to be coy and act as though I had no idea what he was talking about. He, of course, knew that I was lying, and he struck me across the face. He told me that I was a sad, pathetic man and threatened physical violence if I didn't obey his wishes. He also threatened to tell my wife. But technically, said Mike, you weren't doing anything wrong. That is certainly not how my wife would see it. There were other conditions as well. Such as, he wanted me to put him in touch with James Pine. Why? From talking with me, Stephen had learned of the false security Alex had from her father's watchful eye. He used this to his advantage. He basically blackmailed him. He wanted Mr. Pine to help him in a business venture. In exchange, he would not tell Alex that her father knew where she was and that I'd been helping her somewhat under his orders. What was the business venture? A fitness center. Stephen's wife, Mary, has this little dream of owning her own health club. In exchange for their silence, Pine would give them business space in one of the shopping centers he owns here in Lincoln. Free of charge? But Mary's still at home during the day and working at the Kawasaki plant in the evening. What happened? Well, at the time, there was no free space available. Mr. Pine asked them to be patient and wait until the construction on a new center was completed. They refused. They wanted their payment as soon as possible. Mr. Pine was therefore forced to evict one of his current tenants, a greeting card and gift shop run by a Christian organization. Touching. That was not Mr. Pine's idea. The Sinovecs chose a location themselves. The Christian organization is still in the process of vacating the premises. I nodded and thought for a bit. But Alex is gone now. Why doesn't your client simply renege on the deal? Applegate shook his head. The Sinovecs have made it clear to Mr. Pine that if he backs out of the deal, they will make his life difficult for him. I raised my eyebrows and held out my hand to encourage him to explain further. They did not go into any great depth on the matter. Tell me about Timmy Birch. You know about that? Yeah, I followed him from his car dealership to your home the other day, I said. Applegate nodded. You were the man asking about the Pontiac. Yeah, the car that I'm assuming old Vic used to try and take me out. Mr. Birch is a business associate of Steven Sinovec, an associate with very bad luck, if you catch my meaning. The use of the Pontiac was payment on a gambling debt. Yes. Why did he report to you after I pressed him instead of Sinovec? Those were his wishes, not mine. I believe he did that to increase my involvement in the affair, so that to implicate him would further implicate myself. Implicate you in what? Did Sinovec kill Alex? He maintains that he did not. I have no reason not to believe him. Yes, you do. You're just scared of him now is all. I'm not, and I do have reason not to believe him. He's trying to hide something, and I will find out what. If he had nothing to do with Alex's death, he should have no problem with what I'm doing, so I'm going to let you go. Both Mike's and Applegate's heads snapped to look at me. You are? I nodded. You can go now and report back to Vic exactly what I told you. If he didn't kill her, he should have no problem with what I'm doing. I won't try to jam him up. His little criminal enterprises don't mean shit to me. But you, if you try to fuck me over, just remember that I have you on tape leaving a rather suspicious and suggestive message to a younger woman. But the tape proves nothing. As you said earlier, that's not how your wife would see it. We were all silent as Applegate and Mike both looked at me as though I'd swallowed a goat. Finally, Applegate carefully collected the rest of his things, tried to make his appearance more presentable, and carefully walked out of the room without a word. I did nothing but light another cigarette and rub my temples. "I can't believe you did that," Mike said as he walked over the table and sat down across from me. "Yeah, me neither. So now what?" "I guess I'll just wait and see what happens."
"That's it? Just wait?"
"Yeah. And if Steven Sinovec still has a problem with me, I'll know soon enough. Or maybe he'll just be so annoyed with you that he'll just kill you and be done with it altogether." "Yeah, I guess there's that too." All right, kids, that there is chapters 28 and 29. They were short ones again this week, so I went ahead and combined them for you. That leaves us with chapter 30 and only about 40 pages left of this book. What you think about that, kids? But if you can't wait to find out what happens in those last 40 pages, go to Amazon.com, look up Matthew Mosman. While you're there, also peruse the two fine albums by the gentleman you're hearing above me as we speak. A wonderful gentleman named Kyle Ashew. Hopefully I will get to see over the Christmas holiday. He has two albums available for sale on the Amazon.com. The one you're hearing now is his second album called Blues for Mel. This track is called Killer Ray. It is one of my favorites. So please check those out for me. Go back to the archive. Look up some of these older episodes. Like I said, as of now, I have 8 up there. As weeks go by, I will add a couple more because, again, limited space on the SoundCloud as well. And I'm just too damn cheap to be able to afford extra memory for these bad boys. And if, again, if you're on the Facebook, go to Mopod Podcast, the fan page, like it, stay up to date with any new doings. There often aren't many, but if there's one, you can find it there. And if you'd like to send me some feedback, contact me at mopod@live.com. Right now, the only way getting feedback is checking how many people listen and download, which is always good. Everyone seemed to really enjoy the episode with my wife Amanda, so that was good to hear. In the meantime, thank you for listening, thank you for buying the books, and for the love of God, pull your head out of your ass while you're driving. For me.